This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
My name's Helen Withicombe and I'm the programming manager here at the Wheeler Centre. Joining me on stage is an author who needs very little introduction, Jane Harper, whose own story of rise to literary success is the stuff of legend, and who is the author of two particularly excellent stories of her own, The Dry and the newly published Force of Nature. Jane has worked as a print journalist for 13 years in both Australia and the UK. Winner of the Victorian Premier's Literary Award for an unpublished manuscript, Jane's debut crime novel, The Dry, was an instant success, selling into 20 countries, winning a host of prizes, including the ABIA Book of the Year and just last month, the Ned Kelly Award. Congratulations. The New York Times has described it as a breathless page-turner. And to top it all off, the manuscript has been optioned by Reese Witherspoon's production company. I know. So after all this, after the international bidding wars, the three-book deal, my most urgent question for you is, have you met Reese Witherspoon?
No, I haven't. I haven't met her. Can you all hear me? Is that okay? No, I haven't met her. I've been lucky enough to meet her her production partner, who's a woman called Bruna Papandrea. And she is actually Australian by birth. She's from Adelaide, but she's now this big shot LA producer, and they worked together on Big Little Lies, a series I'm sure many of you will have seen recently. So, they're the team behind it. I've met Bruna a number of times and had quite a few conversations with her, but I've yet to meet Reese.
Yet to get her mobile number. Yet
exactly,
to start texting
yes.
Her but seriously, these experiences, like it's quite incredible. How have they set you up to write book number two?
It has been incredible. It's been fantastic, really. I mean, when I started writing The Dry, I had very few expectations for it, really. It was more of a personal learning exercise and hobby, really. Not even so much hobby. I wanted to write a book, and I was just trying to fit it in around my full-time work, and I set myself the goal just purely of trying to finish it and trying to get to the end of a manuscript just so that I could feel that I'd actually, you know, written something and achieved that goal, I guess. And then I didn't really let myself think much beyond that, not really even to publication and certainly not any further beyond that. So I was absolutely thrilled by, you know, getting it published and the success it's had, and most particularly, I think, the way the booksellers and readers in particular have you know, embraced it. And when people say they enjoyed it, that's, you know, music to my ears, that's all I really wanted for it. So to write book two, Force of Nature was my book that was released earlier this week. I'd already actually started writing that before The Dry even came out. I've been a journalist, as we said, for 13 years. I've had a lot of experience writing to deadline and writing under pressure. So it wasn't that much out of my comfort zone to just continue on working. Once I'd finished the edits for The Dry, I pretty much launched straight into Force of Nature and just continued working on it in much the same way.
I was really interested I feel like you had a 13-year apprenticeship to becoming a novel writer, with your career as a journalist. So turns out deadlines are still a great thing.
They are, yeah. I really respond well to deadlines, and that was, I still set myself artificial deadlines. I set myself little goals. I work, yeah, really well to deadline, and that's really served me well, I think, through both books.
Mm. So we are here to talk about your new book. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. So so Force of Nature is a title. It's an Australian mystery. It's set in a remote bushland area. It's the kind of book that has elements that appeal to both men and women. And for those of you who've read The Dry, you will see some of the same themes and characters explored a little bit further in Force of Nature. But for readers who haven't read The Dry, you can still pick it up and enjoy it as a standalone. So that's you know, basically what it is.
Mm. Could you actually give us a little bit of a read from the book?
Sure. So I'll read a little bit from the prologue. So just to set the scene, the plot revolves around five corporate city women who are sent off to this remote bushland region on very reluctantly on a corporate team building exercise. And they get sent off with their, you know, backpacks and their hiking boots, sent in, and five of them go in, and after 3 days, four of them come out, and they're late to the meeting point, and they're dishevelled and they're distressed, and they're very vague about how they managed to become separated from the fifth member of their party. So I'll just read a little bit from the prologue, and we pick it up here from just a point where there's also a men's team taking part. The men's team have turned up on time. They're safe in the van waiting, and people are starting to get increasingly concerned about what has become of this group of five women. High-pitched and bird-like, it was an unusual sound in the night, and every head turned as four figures crested the hill. Two seemed to be supporting a third, while a fourth tripped along unsteadily behind them. The blood on her forehead looked black from a distance. "Help us," one of them was screaming, more than one. "We're here. We need help. She needs a doctor. Please help. Thank God we found you." The searchers were running. The men, their phones abandoned on the minibus seats, were panting several paces behind them. "We were lost," one of the women was saying. Someone else said, "We lost her." It was hard to make the distinction. The women were calling and crying, their voices tumbling over one another. "Is Alice here? Did she make it? Is she safe?" In the chaos, in the night, it was impossible to say which of the four had asked after Alice's welfare. Later, when everything got worse, each would insist it had been them.
Have you ever been on a corporate retreat like this? Were you drawing on? I mean, specifically like this.
No. Thank God. No, I haven't. I was in print journalism for all of my career, and I have to say, there was never the budget for anything like that. So, no, I managed to escape it. I've been on my fair share, I would say, of awkward team building sort of in office exercises.
Haven't we all?
I've had the misfortune to chair a number of committees, which I've vowed never to do again. No, I haven't. But it's funny because when I was actually writing the book and I was sort of, you know, vaguely mentioning the plot to people, the number of people who said, "Oh my God, like, I've got to tell you what happened to me on my corporate retreat," and I would have loved to have put some of them in the book. But I think honestly, some of them were a little bit unbelievable. I think it would have stretched belief, some of the things they said.
So a lot of the book, it's these four women are under intense pressure out in the bush. A lot of the book is almost about the disintegration of their relationship as they get further and further away from civilization. Could you talk a little bit about how you wrote that?
Yeah, it is. So a lot of the storyline, the way that the novel is structured is it's sort of structured in two parts, really. And one part is involves the main protagonist, Aaron Falk, who some of you may remember from The Dry. And he's involved because this isn't a spoiler, this is revealed very early on. He's involved because a missing woman was actually helping him investigate a case into the company that they all work for. So that's how he is sort of brought into this situation. So part of the book involves, his investigation, and then alternate chapters tell in real time the story of what has happened actually during these days in the bushland. And, you know, as you said, the sort of disintegration of this group and the kind of pressures that come to the fore when people are put out of their comfort zone. And that was an aspect that really particularly interested me. I think that sort of, I guess that way that people respond when they're put under pressure, and the way that people react very differently to different things was something I really, really enjoyed kind of exploring in this book. And that's always been the thing that's interested me in both novels, both The Dry and Force of Nature, has been those relationships under pressure and the way that problems tend to sort of manifest and the way that they make people respond in ways that they maybe otherwise wouldn't respond.
Hmm. And I noticed there was similarities to The Dry in that it was nature that was sort of putting them under pressure. That was that something that you wanted to include again in this book as a sort of call and response?
I did. I wanted to write another book. I very much wanted to write, obviously, another book set in Australia, and I wanted to write a book that ideally, again, tapped into that kind of really great, natural atmosphere that I think the Australian landscape has, and in such variety as well. So I felt like you know, setting it in the bushland was, you know, a really good way to kind of, you know, create a lot of, I think, a lot of uncertainty. I think it's something that a lot of people feel very uncomfortable and unfamiliar in, that kind of setting, even when maybe you feel, you know, maybe when you superficially feel quite confident. I think it's quite easy to lose that confidence if something goes a little bit wrong. And I feel that those kind of settings really lend themselves to books, you know, like this, that have a bit of mystery and a bit of suspense in them.
I did get shadows of other books and texts. You know, there was sort of a hint of Picnic at Hanging Rock, you know, four girls go in, three girls come out. A little bit of Ivan Milat even, you know, that sort of... that fear that a lot of Australians have of the bush and the inherent danger that is also almost part of our subconscious. Were there books or films or anything that influenced you as you were writing it?
I think probably, yeah, a lot of things sort of came to play. I do try not to draw too heavily, certainly ever on real life cases. Like, I think that's quite, that's something I'm really reluctant to do, because I feel like if you're going to write a fictionalised account of a real event, you really owe it to, you know, those people who are involved to absolutely do it justice and be very respectful of the fact that they've been through, you know, something very traumatic. So I try and really steer away from that. But at the same time, I do try and pick out elements that I think ring true to people and feel authentic, be that something from, you know, that's maybe made news in the past or is from sort of, you know, books and stories that we're aware of. And I guess it's those elements that kind of give it that sort of authenticity, ideally. And also, I personally feel very uncomfortable in bushland. So I drew quite a lot of my own reluctance, really, to spend too much time in that kind of environment.
Mm. And you do capture that so well, that that it's, again, something you did beautifully in The Dry, that it really made me understand the extent that of a drought, what a true drought could be, in that beautiful scene where Falk goes back to the river and it was dry, the intense cold and how easily you could get lost in the bush. You made it quite terrifying, actually. Well done.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So landscape is obviously important to you. What is it about landscape that you continue to go back to, and, you know, you do treat it as a character in your books?
I think it's partly is a practical reason, like I briefly mentioned, with the fact that I think it lends itself well to these kind of plots. I think also for me, you know, it's a way, I guess, of creating, setting both books in sort of fairly isolated, you know, cut off areas. I think for me, was a way of creating the kind of suspense that I think is quite hard to find in modern life, when, you know, we've all got mobile phones and there's coffee shops in every corner, and you know, we're so surrounded by people. I think that sort of experience is something that's quite hard to replicate in, you know, an urban environment. So that is, like, probably one of the biggest reasons why, you know, for plot purposes, why I set them in those isolated areas. And the second reason is I just really enjoy writing about them. I think it's sort of, it does give you such a great kind of head start, because you have this, like, fantastic landscape to play with and all these opportunities and all these things that can go, you know, right or wrong, depending on which way you want to turn things. So, yeah, it's a bit of a combination of the two.
Mm. And what I really admired was the way you managed to create such claustrophobic atmospheres in the outdoors, which is, yeah, it shouldn't work, but it did. So how did the writing of this book, how did the process of writing this book compare to that of writing the Dry?
It was a bit different for me. When I wrote The Dry, I was working full-time at the Herald Sun, and I wrote The Dry really around my full-time job. So I did, I remember I used to get up like an hour earlier and I'd do a solid hour before I'd go to work, and then I'd come home and I remember I wouldn't change out of my work clothes. I'd just try and sit straight down and do another hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever I could sort of face, to be honest, you know, afterwards. And that was sort of the process, really. And I just tried to chip away at it and do a little bit often. You know, and my goal really, as I said, was just to try and, you know, get to the end and try and make it the best that I could. So it very much felt like quite a personal pursuit. Force of Nature was different for in a number of ways. I mean, now, so I've left the Herald Sun. I'm now a full-time author. I also, in September last year, I actually had my first baby as well. So, the process has been quite different. So I had my baby while I was still working on Force of Nature, and I had to just really draw on that journalism experience again, and actually not. Unlike when I was writing The Dry, I just had to find those hours and really make them count. So every time I got a chance to work, I would just sit down and really, I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't agonise about what I was going to write that day. I just sat down and tried to get the words on paper and just chip away at it again and again.
And how did you find the editing process? It would have been so unfamiliar the first time around, and now you sort of knew what to expect.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, the editing process was... Yeah, it's right. I mean, first time, I think I was really pleasantly surprised by quite how valuable the editing process was, especially when I got the publishing deals with Pam McMillan and also the US and UK publishers who also gave notes. I thought it was it shouldn't have been eye-opening, but I had no real experience of the industry. So I was really, impressed by the quality of the feedback I got from those professional editors, and the way I feel it really helped me sort of elevate the novel. I mean, ultimately, that's the other thing I learned, though. Ultimately, like, nobody else can sort of write it for you or do the edits for you. You still have to, a lot of people kind of can point out the issues. It then comes down to you to solve them. But I think having some sort of fresh, eyes to really help you see things in a way that you can't see yourself, I think, is such a valuable input. And so second time round with Force of Nature, I did obviously, expect and get that same level of, input. But I think I'd also learned to trust myself a bit more with it. So when, issues or questions were raised, having done it once with The Dry, I think I felt a bit more confident in myself that, that I could solve it and I could find a solution or find a way to tweak something and make it better.
And it's beautifully plotted, especially with the two timelines. It's very technically proficient. Was that very difficult to wrangle, to sort of braid them together?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was very hard, actually. That was something I wanted. I wanted to do that kind of alternating chapters for a number of reasons. I wanted it to sort of be a story that kind of came together in two parts into, a conclusion at the end. So I always kind of knew that was the way I wanted to tell it, and that was always the structure right from the start. And that's one of the things that's sort of all well and good until actually then, you do sort of recognise, plot points you have to fix, or you need to add in chapters, and then you have to add in another alternate chapter so that there's still the continuity of back and forth. And especially towards the end, when the chapters start getting shorter and the sort of the action starts coming together, I do remember because sometimes I used to work in the library, and I remember sort of sitting there and taking out about like 25,000 words out of the end and just putting a whole new word file and just spending days and days just kind of like feeding them together and trying to sort of splice these two storylines. So I think it was, I think it was the right decision. Like, I'm happy with the structure of it. But I'm quite glad I didn't realise quite how much work it would be going into it.
Yes, I had visions of, different coloured text and, highlighters and a whole storyboard.
Yeah, yep. There was a bit of that, yeah.
but dual narratives is something, it's almost a signature of yours now, because it was such a wonderful feature of The Dry, treated differently, but the two stories and the past and the present.
It has actually sort of it become a feature of both books. It's interesting. Like, I do sort of think, like, would I do that for the next one, or would I? Is that something I should try and move away from, or should I you know, does it work every time? So with the dry, it's interesting. I didn't actually have that feature to start. For those of you who may not have read the dry, in the dry, there's flashback scenes. So, you know, it's largely told from the kind of present day investigation, but then certain scenes sort of flashback, so the reader sees sort of in, you know, in firsthand what's, you know, what took place at that time. And the reason I did that was because when I was writing it, I found there are a lot of instances where it basically was sort of three people sitting in a living room with someone recounting a conversation with someone else, again, you know, to someone else. So there was a lot of, you know, just, I guess, kind of third-hand telling, and then it's again filtered through before the reader sees it. So it just felt very flat, and it was something that I just, I didn't really feel like it was engaging the reader that well. So more as an experiment than anything else, I just tried, you know, the flashbacks in a couple of places to see if that gave it a bit more immediacy, and let the reader kind of form their own judgments, I guess, what was going on, rather than have it always filtered through the eyes of, you know, a secondary or, you know, character. So that was how I sort of ended up doing it on the dry. And then with Force of Nature, I did make, as I said, from the start, quite a deliberate decision to do it in that kind of split chapters, which is a bit more structured in that. But again, it was for much the same reasons. I felt like, it just meant that people could make, you know, see for themselves, really. The reader wasn't too far removed from the action.
Mm. And it's, as I said, incredibly technically proficient. Like, that's you more than achieve what you set out to do. So it's what raises, I think, your writing to literary crime writing.
Oh, thank you.
So, I mean, you are a crime writer, so you are dealing with violence and some pretty dark themes. But one thing that I do love about the way you treat it is that you there's no gratuitous violence. You know, a lot of the really terrible things sort of happen off camera, for want of a better phrase. So I was really intrigued by how you go about writing violence without actually writing any violence.
Yeah, I do that for much the same reasons I do almost everything in the book, and that is I try and write the kind of books that I like to read, and I personally don't enjoy reading about gratuitous or, you know, voyeuristic violence. Like, it just does not appeal to me, and it never has. And I don't enjoy reading about it, so I don't, enjoy writing about it. But, you know, inevitably, if you're going to write a book, I guess, with a bit of, you know, a mystery or suspense or a crime at its heart, there's got to be that sort of, I suppose, that violent act to kind of as a catalyst for everything else that happens. But I do... you know, in sort of every case where I've had to, I guess, you know, write something like that, I do try and treat it as, you know, as I guess the catalyst, but not the focus so much. So I don't like to linger on it too much. And my interest really more is about the repercussions and the kind of ripple effects that these, you know, the terrible acts or, you know, pressure has on people. And that's really the bit that interests me most. So that's the bit that... you know, I personally prefer to focus on.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying before about relationships and how people sort of behave under pressure. A lot of this book is about relationships, all kinds of different relationships, you know, fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, friends, work, colleagues. What drew you to write about them and what happens when they go bad?
Yeah, I think it was just that sort of ongoing fascination with the relationships. One of the things I really enjoyed about writing The Dry that sort of surprised me during the writing process, one of the many things that surprised me was how much I sort of became interested and invested in the relationships between the characters and how much of a focal point that came. When I first started writing it, I thought it was going to be a sort of straightforward mystery, really, and there would be a crime and it would be a sort of investigation, there would be a solution. And I hadn't quite appreciated how, I think, you know, important, you know, the relationships between the characters would be in that. So I was much more aware of that going into Force of Nature. And I think with the plot itself just lent itself very well to those kind of, that kind of exploration. There's so many, you know, there's five women, there's Aaron Falk, that's his new partner. They've all got their back issues. They've all got their kind of, you know, tensions between themselves and the way they kind of play out and the way that kind of impacts, you know, the events and what happens, I think was the thing that actually really made me want to write a story in the first place.
And the it's a testament to your beautiful characterization as well, because I mean the character of Falk is, I would say, one of the great characters in Australian crime fiction today. Do you like him? Is it someone who you would enjoy spending time with?
Yeah, I do. I do like him, and I think you know, I really you know, I liked him in The Dry, and I always I liked being able to you know, bring him out a little bit more in Force of Nature. I think in The Dry he was quite constrained by the you know, the circumstances and his hometown and the people who knew him and his past. In the Force of Nature he's a little bit freer, although he is quite a constrained man in many ways, so not entirely, but I feel like it's it was an opportunity to kind of bring him out in a slightly different way. But I do like him, and I always hope that the readers would like him as well. I think, again, coming back to books that I like to read, I find it quite frustrating when the main character is so deeply flawed that you just can't relate to them. You know, they're just so alcoholic, or, you know, that you can't... It becomes unbelievable that they could actually hold down a job or have a coherent thought or form any kind of relationship. And I feel like I really wanted to steer away from that and have him as someone who does have, I guess, his own issues like we all do, but not so much that they're entirely crippling or alienating.
And it's, I mean, you've brought him out a little bit more in Force of Nature. It's, I guess it depends if this series continues or not, but I feel like there are hidden depths that you can just keep plumbing.
Yeah, and I would like to revisit him in future novels. Like, I definitely, you know, I feel like he has sort of, yeah, a narrative arc still to play out, and you know, and I do enjoy him, and you know, I hope readers do as well, really.
Yeah. Some of the other characters that you've created in this book, I just loved, and they are, you know, very flawed in their own way. I particularly enjoyed reading Jill's section. Did you enjoy writing her?
Yeah, I did. So Jill is the five women who go into the bushland. Jill is basically the boss. So she's she comes from money. She's the daughter of the founder of this company. Her brother is a chief executive, and she is holds this extremely high up role. She basically is the the most sort of senior team member. But she also is. She's older, she's the oldest member of the party, she's quite overweight, she's very uncomfortable in the bushland, and the sort of the thing I liked about writing her was that kind of the contrast between someone who is very in control in their day-to-day life when they're put in a situation, you know, which is very out of their comfort zone, how whether they're able to keep that sort of still retain those leadership qualities, or whether they just crumble under pressure.
Mm. She has a great, it's not even a line, it's a thought about she's developing a blister on the back of her foot, you know, sort of on day one, and she keeps thinking back to the man who sold her the shoes with a deep and lasting sense of being let down or remorse or something. Anyway, butchered it. It was great. You should read it. When you start writing a book, do you start with a character or a setting or a crime in mind?
I always start with... I always have to kind of start and the end. Which would come first? The plot. It would be the plot. I'm thinking, would it be a main a character? But it would always be... So I've only written two books, so both times I've had this kind of like sort of initial idea, and then I kind of think, you know, but what if, you know, what if X, Y, Z happened, and you know, this is how it ended, and that's kind of the starting point where I come from, and then from that I would then usually then sort of try and build a couple of plot points along the way if I can at that stage, but then sort of start adding in the characters to really fit the plot. So, like, who do I need to tell the story, and what, you know, roles do I need certain people to play, and what relationships should they have with each other? So it's kind of plot driven. Then I kind of add in the characters, and then it's only really maybe a little bit later that some of the themes start coming out. So there's usually maybe one overriding theme that is largely plot related. But I found writing for me is a really layered process. So it's only often through, you know, sort of maybe the third draft onwards that a lot of the kind of the more subtle themes and the more subtle kind of character traits and things start to come out once I'm a bit more comfortable with the plot.
And there's sort of elements of social commentary in both books, actually, which I really enjoyed. So in the first book, one of the layers was about domestic violence and the attitudes towards it and the patterns. And for this book, there's similar treatment given to bullying, which felt very relevant, I thought.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, when you've got sort of, I think when you've got a group of people in a corporate environment, be that a workplace or be that, a bushland retreat or on a sports field or anything where it's sort of team, I think there very often is this sort of underlying, pecking order, really. And I think that's not something that we necessarily grow out of. I think that's something that tends to sort of come out, in a lot of different workplaces, in more subtle ways than others a lot of the time, and maybe in, the kind of ways that don't necessarily get flagged up with human resources all the time and things. But I think there's definitely sort of power struggles that go on, I think in all workplaces, I think.
Mm. And again, in times of stress and pressure, like an outdoor corporate retreat.
Yes, absolutely.
So you did sign a 3-book deal with Pan Macmillan. Are you working on anything at the moment? You spoke earlier about you started writing Force of Nature while you were still finishing off The Dry. Are you doing anything at the moment?
So I'm planning book 3. I haven't started writing that one yet. So I'm basically doing the publicity and promotion for the Force of Nature for the launch, and then as soon as that's finished, I'll get into writing book 3. So I'm kind of pulling together the ideas and things at the moment, but I will start writing it straight away, pretty much as soon as I get back and have a bit of time at a desk, really.
Yeah. But we're unlikely to see Folk, is that the impression?
Oh, not necessarily. So it will definitely be another Australian mystery, and it will definitely be in kind of an iconic Australian setting. And I feel it will be, very similar to both books in the kind of tone and feel. So I think it will my intention is obviously to very much appeal to readers who enjoyed both books. Whether he's actually in the very next one or whether he comes back in a future book is still what I'm working out, purely because I really enjoy writing about him and I definitely want to return to him, but I would want his presence to be authentic and and I guess like sort of do it justice. I don't just want to put him in for the sake of it, really.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the future where your series of novels is known as Jane Harper's Folk novels. So the other fun fact about The Dry is, of course, that you wrote your first draft of it while doing an online course. Could you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, sure. So as I was saying at the start, I was working as a journalist and I was doing that full time. And I'd wanted to write a book for years and years, and I'd never done it, and I'd never really even tried. Like, I'd never sort of given myself the kind of the time or I really backed myself to do it. I think it just seemed like such a huge undertaking for such uncertain rewards. And I honestly felt like, I could spend all this time and effort and if it doesn't get published, how devastating is that? And that was the thing that stopped me from trying for years. It was that kind of fear of failure after all this invested time. And it was only... I can't really explain what changed. I think it was just, I think I just realised that actually, if you want to write a book, you have to write a book. It doesn't write itself and it's not just going to appear out of nowhere. So I thought, well, the thing that sort of helped me was sort of changing that mindset. And I just thought, like, I'm just going to try and write it and I'm not going to have any expectations if it gets published. I'm just going to do it for my own benefit, just to try and, use it as purely as a learning exercise to get through, see if I can get to the end, and then learn what I can, and then maybe if it's no good, it's no good, but maybe I can use that and write like a better novel next time, and just kind of approach it like that. So the way I decided to do it was I thought I wasn't sure how to start, so I thought I'll try, I'll do a course and see if, you know, that kind of gives me a bit of a, you know, an insight into how to get this thing started. I found a 12-week online course, which is being run in the UK, and it was starting quite soon, and you had to send off an idea and an opening chapter. So I sat down and I thought, what would I like to write about? I'd like to write this Australian mystery novel. Sent off this application, and with the idea that eventually became The Dry. And I wrote my first draft, which was 40,000 words from start to finish, which is very short. A finished novel was 90,000 words, but it did get to the end. And I wrote that during the 12 weeks. And for me, that was a huge kind of, like, absolute kind of mental leap. Like, suddenly having broken that threshold of having got to, you know, the end, you know, it felt like, well, I can't abandon it now. Like, obviously I have to keep working on it. And it was such a huge motivating factor to having achieved that.
Yeah. And the wonderful pressure of deadlines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have an opinion about sort of nature versus nurture when it comes to writing? Do you think that if you hadn't had your years of experience as a writer already, that the course would have been as successful for you?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. You know, I've been a professional writer for 13 years before I started writing The Dry. So often, sometimes the story of The Dry kind of gets told as this kind of, you know, I wrote my first novel and it was a success, and isn't that amazing? It kind of came out of nowhere. But, you know, it didn't really come out of nowhere, because I mean, I've been working on a newspaper every day of my professional life, like daily newspapers, like hard newsrooms, you know, things where, deadlines were unmovable. You had editors breathing down your neck. You know, there was a lot of pressure, and, you know, and I learned then to, like, I could, you know, I can churn out words, like I can write thousands of words a day, you know, and on subjects I'm not even interested in, and, you know, so it was, I think when it came to then writing something that I was interested in, it was for sort of my own benefit, I guess, you know, it wasn't that much of a leap for me in the end when I actually decided to do it, to be able to transfer those skills into fiction writing. It is a bit different, you know, it's obviously a different style of writing, but the actual sort of skills and, you know, that kind of daily motivation and things aren't that different, I think. So I think a lot of it was that training. I feel, you know, and I do feel, and I've said this before, I do feel like writing is something that can be taught, absolutely. I feel like some people, you know, some people are born good at things, like some people are, you know, great athletes and things, and so some people are always naturally good at some things rather than others. But I do feel, you know, I mean, I've seen, you know, cadets come into newsrooms not being able to write news stories because they've never done it, fair enough. And then they try a few times, they get some feedback, and they try a few more times. And then, you know, a couple of years later, they're, you know, getting promoted into sort of, you know, more senior journalism roles because they got better. So it's not something that people are always born with. I think you absolutely can improve your writing.
It's like a muscle, isn't it? You just sort of have to work it and
regularly.
Yeah,
yeah.
So were there skills and habits that you learnt in that amazing 12-week writing course that you have applied to the new book?
Yes and no. And I say that because I did get some... For me, the main benefit of the writing course was that it gave me that motivation at a time when I needed it. So by the time I signed up for the course, I was ready to write my book. You know, I wanted to do it. I was committed, I was interested in getting the feedback, and I was prepared to kind of take on the lessons learned. So, you know, when people ask me what course it was, I don't mind disclosing, it was a Curtis Brown Creative online 12-week writing course, which is run from the Curtis Brown Agency in London. But actually, almost actually at their request, I actually sort of should put a little bit of a note on that, saying that it wasn't so much that it was some magical course that created this book, you know, because I think they've had quite a lot of people who sort of sign up, you know, kind of want, like, you know, can I have the Dry course, you know, and it didn't really work like that. I mean, I do feel actually any decent writing course at that time probably would have given me the same skills. It was a very good course, but there are lots of good courses, and I feel like for me the main benefit was you know, the motivation it gave me and the fact that I was surrounded by other people who took their writing and my writing seriously, and we were expected to, you know, work on our novels and, you know, take this sort of constructive criticism, and, you know, and it was that really that was the true benefit for me. What was your question again? Sorry. Did I learn anything from it?
Yeah.
So I learned, so that was really the main benefit I learned from it, I think. It came at the right time. I was ready to write the book.
And all that feedback, I guess, kind of prepped you for the editing process, which, is quite unique, I think.
Yeah, it did. And I think it was something really good about, putting your work out there. It's the first time I'd ever done that. I'd never sort of put out any kind of, you know, fiction for, you know, critique. I remember I was the first, we took it in turns of the week, and I was week one on this brand new sort of online course, didn't know anybody, you know, just kind of had to put it out there and get sort of 15 people come back and tell me I used too much description. It's like, oh, okay, thank you. But it was good. They were right. It was true. I sort of cut a lot of it out, and the book was, my writing is much better for it. So I think if you can get, you know, decent sort of feedback, it is absolutely worth, you know, at least considering it.
Hmm. So you were a finance journalist. How much of you is in the character of Aaron Falk? Have you ever gone into your editor and said, we need to follow the money?
No. Although he might have said that to me once or twice, I'm not too sure. He was probably more business-minded than I was. So I wasn't always a finance journalist. I was actually a general news reporter for a lot of years. So I did a lot of different things. I was actually only went onto the business desk in the very last few years of my career when I was at the Herald Sun. And before that, I'd done all kinds of reporting. So lots of like usual kind of cadet stuff like community fates and school stories. And I did a bit of crime, but I also did like, you know, sort of court features, a bit of health, all that kind of stuff. So I had quite a varied, you know, varied career really in terms of the stories I covered. So in terms of how much of me is in the main character, I suppose inevitably some, in that not sort of consciously, but I suppose when I sort of, you know, I'm writing any character really, I try and think, you know, how would they respond in this situation? And I suppose the first place that goes to is how would I respond in that situation? And maybe for Falk, more than any of the other characters, he tends to respond how I would respond. A lot of the other characters, you then have to think, well, maybe that's how I would respond, but is that how they would respond? And you have to kind of put it through that filter. So I suppose out of all the characters, he's probably the one who is the most the most true to me, I suppose.
So I started asking you about Reese Witherspoon, but do you know anything about the filming of The Dry at all? Are you involved in the process at all?
So it's going well. I'm sort of involved. They do keep me, they keep me sort of up to date in how it's going. And it does seem to, the production talks are going well. So it's, you know, it's moving through the pipeline. There's a script being prepared at the moment, not by me. They did actually ask if I was interested in being involved, but I feel like the best thing I can do is focus on the novels. That's kind of the thing that I feel I can bring the most to the table by doing, and, you know, leave script writing to someone who is actually an expert in that field. So the script is being written at the moment. I think that's nearly completed. There's a director who's been attached, and Bruna Papandrea, Reese Witherspoon's partner, was asked at the Emmys the other week about it, and she said then that they, well, much the same thing, and she said they're actually hoping to maybe start filming next year.
Wow.
So, you know, which would be amazing, I mean, if that happened. And the intention, as far as I'm aware, also is very much to make it as a movie set in Australia. So there's been no sort of discussion about translating it to the States like they did with Big Little Lies. I think it's very much will be an Australian setting. And then they're also, in the meantime, they're also interested in looking at Force of Nature as well. So, so that's exciting too.
That is very exciting.
Yeah.
It must be quite a surreal experience. Literally a very surreal experience, but giving your story over to someone else to turn into something else, does that?
It kind of is, although when they they're formally optioned The Dry now, but when I first got the phone call to say that they were interested, I didn't actually know they were they'd looked at it. So it wasn't something that I knew had gone in front of them and, you know, was possibly on the cards. I just got this sort of amazing phone call out of the blue saying that they were interested in taking it on. So, you know, that was obviously kind of great news from the start. So I was always sort of on board with the process, really. But in terms of handing it over, I actually don't really have that much of a problem with it. I think because, you know, I guess my sort of main focus is writing novels, and I do feel like that's, you know, that's the most productive thing I can do, is just write the best novels I can, and then if someone else has the ability to, you know, turn them into another form, like, you know, turn into a movie or something, like, how amazing is that? I mean, I would love to see that happen. I'd love to see what they would do with The Dry. I feel like, you know, I have a lot of confidence in them. I think they seem like a great team with, you know, this great sort of pedigree and this reputation. I really enjoy Big Little Lies. So I feel like having that level of confidence in them, you know, I'm actually, yeah, quite happy just to give them the freedom to do what they think they need to do.
Mm. And so great that you're working with women on this as well. I would find that, I don't know, very comforting in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I think, yeah, for sure. I think especially... not only that, and also the fact that Bruna herself is Australian as well. I think she, you know, really, you know, is very keen to keep that kind of Australian flavour too. So, yeah, both those things combined, I think, you know, I feel really, you know, fortunate to have them interested.
Yeah. So we will be opening the floor to questions. So there will be some ushers arriving with microphones any minute now. So if you do have a question, please get your hand up nice and high in the air and have your chance to ask Jane.
Hello, Jane. I really enjoyed The Dry. I'm actually quite interested in the fact that you said you don't like being in the Australian bush and you're quite scared of it. I grew up in rural Victoria and I could really identify with your surroundings. So how do you think of the characters and get them so true to force when you've not actually experienced it and you don't actually like the environment particularly?
That sounds quite bad when you put it like that, isn't it? It's not so much, yeah, I should clarify. It's not that I, you know, have anything at all against sort of the Australian landscape. You know, I think the landscape's obviously beautiful and it has so much, you know, to offer. It was more actually... specifically bushwalking is something that always makes me a little bit on edge. But no, in terms of the, I guess, capturing that landscape, what I really try and do, and this is sort of quite a practical answer, I guess, what I try and do with the description of landscapes or town or people for that matter is I really try and pull out those kind of key elements that are going to ring true to the readers. So I try really hard not to... you know, overburden them with too much unnecessary description. I think readers are, you know, by definition, intelligent enough to form their own pictures of things. And I think you just need to kind of focus and save your words for those things that are really going to, you know, hone in on those key points that are going to create that picture. And that's what I try and do. And that's sort of the best way I can explain it, really. I think just try and think to myself, what are those key things I think of when I think of these landscapes? And that's the kind of things I try and capture.
You really do capture it. It's the amount of trust that you had continue to have in your readers is really obvious in your books, I think. And those turns of phrase that you manage to capture, those particularly Australian, you know, little snippets of conversation that just sets up an entire person, I think.
Oh, thank you. I think that's actually, again, comes back to journalism a lot. I think that's years and years of, like, taking down quotes and then writing them back verbatim and then putting them in the story and picking out the best bits and things. So I think that's, yeah, that's the journalism to thank for that, I think.
Yeah.
Hi, Jane. I really enjoyed The Dry as well, particularly how you brought together past and future events and tied it all together. My question is actually around Aaron. He's got quite a sad, complex character. And just actually wondering how you developed him. Was he actually based on anybody or was he just sort of something that just came to you?
Yeah, thanks for that. When I was coming up with his character, so I did have kind of the plot idea for The Dry first, and then and I had this sort of idea around this, you know, death of this farming family, and the father of that family was probably the first character I came up with. And I wanted the main character to be someone who was close to him and who had this sort of shared history. And there was, a number of people that could be. I mean, it could be a family member, it could be a girlfriend, or it could be a friend, you know. And I think family member and girlfriend both had too many sort of complex layers that weren't what stories I wanted to tell. So I sort of settled on this idea of a friend. And that was kind of the main sort of genesis of him. And I wanted him to be this man who kind of had this history that he'd moved away from. And he was really at odds with, you know, the town that he'd left behind. So he, you know, he has a desk job. He doesn't spend, you know, his job doesn't involve any time on land. He has pale skin, so he's not even very good in the, you know, outside in the heat. So all these kind of things that, make him, you know, contrast him, I guess, with a lot of the people that he comes into contact with when he returns. And I think I also want him to be someone likeable, though. I want him to be someone that, you know, the readers would relate to and could really get behind, and someone who they felt, I guess, they trusted to, you know, discover this town or this story. You know, in both cases, like, discover what's happening, you know, through his eyes and through his judgment.
And he's such a, as you say, a very controlled person. And I mean, crime by its very nature is uncontrolled. So I think there's a beautiful juxtaposition there that you've created. Are there any other questions?
I haven't read The Dry, but that point aside, there's a whole genre of climate change science fiction that has emerged. And I don't know whether you've considered going down that track, because Australia is one place that it's being very much impacted by climate change. And on top of it, probably the ultimate climate denialist is Andrew Bolt. I don't know how closely you work with him, but it might be interesting to sort of write a climate change novel and see how Andrew would respond.
Well, thank God you haven't started your third novel. So
that's right. Yeah, quite right. Well, I do like writing about nature and about, you know, the weather and things. So maybe for the third one.
A clarify is very hot right now. So that's right. Yeah. Any other questions?
Hi, Jane. Congratulations on your success. I'm here with my book club, Five Women. Only one will. We're just really happy for your success. We all loved The Dry. My question is, who's going to play Aaron Falk?
Oh, I know. I know it's a good question. It's one I'd love to be able to answer, actually. But unfortunately, I haven't been told anything about that at all. As far as I'm aware, I don't think any sort of casting or anything has been going on. And in terms of my opinion, they did actually ask if I had any, you know, anyone I wanted to sort of kind of point out, but I deliberately didn't and don't, mainly because, again, actually coming back to what I was saying with my involvement, I feel like the best thing you can do is not try and micromanage too much and just give the experts the freedom to, you know, to do what they think is best. And you know, I think as long as they cast someone, I think, who, you know, had that kind of warmth, I think, and was someone who, you know, people sort of, again, felt like could kind of get behind, and a character they could become involved with, that would be more important to me than, you know, the physical description or the name or anything, I think.
Would you like to be involved in the casting? Do you think that could be fun?
Do you know what? I honestly think that decision would be so hard. Like, and I don't think I'd know what to look for either. I think I would actually just rather leave it to them.
Yeah. And are you going to try and get a cameo in some way?
Yes, definitely.
Write it into your contract.
Absolutely, yeah.
Another question.
Congratulations, Jane. It's a great read. The Dry is a great read. I haven't read the second one yet, but I will. I'm interested in the character of the teacher who had the gambling problem and who defrauded the school, et cetera, et cetera. Were you drawing on anything particular for that, or where did you get him from? Because I felt you really shook up the idea of society and the principle of the school?
I think none of the characters really in any of the books are based on anyone specific that I know or anything, you know, any sort of one particular person. Again, coming back to what I briefly mentioned earlier, I don't like to kind of fictionalise real events or people too much beyond trying to, I guess, capture those sort of nuggets of authenticity. I think with that, the character you're talking about, I think, you know, I feel like in communities, there are always people who have secrets and there are always people who have, you know, sides that we don't realise. And I think, you know, it's something we all do. I think that's probably an acknowledged truth, really. It just sort of depends on, you know, how deep and dark those secrets may be. But that was sort of the motivation really for any character. I sort of thought about what's, you know, I try and think about what their public face is versus what their private face is and to what extent those two, you know, overlap and bleed together, you know, if at all, really.
Do any of your characters stay with you?
I think they all do, really, in a way, more so than when they start. I think when I start writing, the characters are often, you know, a little bit two-dimensional, actually. They're kind of almost slotted in to fit a role, so I need someone who will, you know, have access to this sort of information and will have this relationship with this person. And that's sort of almost how they start. And then it's only really, you know, through the various drafts, they start to kind of, yeah, I guess, develop a life of their own a little bit. And, you know, you start to think a little bit more deeply about their backstories and, you know, who actually is this person and why, you know, why would they behave that way? And based on their past experiences, how would they believably respond to the situations they've been put in?
I loved Reiko in the dry. He was my favourite, the little sidekick. Yeah.
Yeah, just, no, I liked him too, yeah.
Any other questions?
Similarly, loved the dry. My question is actually related to your own personal life and the juggle of being a mum, and your career is just peaking and going to get really, really busy, and just the, I guess, articulating how you think it's going to be just to do that juggle. You're just starting out on the road of new publication and press release, I guess, of your new novel, and maybe being involved in the film development as well.
Yeah, so it was like it is very different now. I've got a baby. I mean, I was lucky that I do have the journalism background, which really helped me a lot. You know, in terms of that kind of discipline and being able to write when I am able to. I don't need sort of particularly external conditions. I don't need to be at a certain place or a certain time of day, or, you know, I don't have like a special, you know, special pen or anything like that. Like I can just kind of do it when I can. I have a very supportive husband. He's actually very, you know, he does my website as well. He's very, very hands-on with our daughter, and he really frees up as much time as possible for me to write. I think though, you know, I think it is sort of probably important to acknowledge that it is a bit of a, you know, a juggle as well though. I think, I don't know, for any sort of newish parents or parents at all out there who are kind of thinking, gosh, maybe I should be writing my book with a newborn, I really would not. Like, I wouldn't honestly recommend it. It wasn't sort of the best experience under which to write a novel, I think. But having said that, I mean, I did have those kind of years of training, I guess, that helped me. But I would, yes, and I feel like going forward, it's not going to be harder than it was. You know, I mean, she's getting older, we're getting more used to it. But I feel like sometimes, you know, when I was sort of, when she was just born, I would sort of see on Instagram, you know, people, like lifting weights and stuff with their 6-week-old in a basket. And I think sometimes you sort of feel like, I don't want people, because I know how hard it is to write a book and I know how hard it is to be a new parent. And I feel like I wouldn't want to give people the false impression that, you know, it's okay not to write your book when you have a baby, I guess is what I'm saying.
I feel like that's just the perfect note to finish on. I could go to one more question, but if you have any questions that weren't answered, please line up, ask Jane in person, and most importantly, join with me now to thank her for her time this evening.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Centre podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercentre.com for the best in books, writing and ideas from Melbourne, Australia and the world.